This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. A little bit of snow, first real snowfall of the season thus far. We've had a few little sprinkles here and there, but this one is relatively significant, so much so that, you know, it affected your driving in this morning. I know there were a few touchy spots on the roads, so do be careful if you're out and about. Well, the Supreme Court of Canada yesterday denied an attempt by the Roman Catholic Church in St. John's to be absolved of responsibility for sex abuse that occurred at Mount Cashel Orphanage. The ruling means the church must pay damages to four key victims of abuse at the orphanage dating back to the 1950s. That brings a 30-year legal battle for those survivors. Here to speak with us about the significance of the ruling is lawyer Jeff Budden, who represents four survivors in this particular case. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Now, what does this ruling mean, in essence?
What it means is that the Court of Appeal decision from July, which held that the local Episcopal Corporation, the Archdiocese, was responsible for compensating these men who had been at Mount Cashel in the 50s and 60s, the Supreme Court is not going to consider that decision. So the decision stands.
And tell us your role in this particular case.
I represent about 60 men who were at Mount Cashel from the late 40s into the 60s. And as part of that case, which we started in 1999, it was decided at a certain point that we would select four of them as representative claimants. And those cases went to trial and ultimately to the Court of Appeal, and then yesterday to the Supreme Court of Canada. And the idea being that those cases would provide guidance perhaps for the resolution of the remaining cases.
So will this impact all those 60 clients or just the four involved in, the representative four?
It will impact everybody because the church has always denied that it was responsible for the abuse that occurred at Mount Cashel, that it was legally responsible. That now has the Newfoundland Court of Appeal has found otherwise, has found that the church is responsible, the local archdiocese. So it was true for those four men, and it'll be true for everybody else in their situation as a general rule.
It's hard to imagine, but an entire generation has grown up since the Hughes inquiry. So for the benefit of our listeners, walk us through a little bit of the history of Mount Cashel. What was it, and when did the problems there first come to light?
Well, in the late 1890s, the government of the day were concerned about the number of children who were orphaned. You have to remember back then tuberculosis and other diseases were rampant. There was a lot of poverty. So the government reached out to all the denominations and asked them what they wanted to do to provide care with some government support for orphaned children. And the Roman Catholic Church in St. John's, their answer to that was to ask the Christian Brothers of Ireland, who had already established a reputation in Ireland for providing care for orphan boys, that the Christian Brothers of Ireland come here and set up an orphanage for boys. Similar arrangements were made by other churches for their children, and for Roman Catholic girls, arrangements were made with the Presentation Sisters and the Sisters of Mercy. But getting back to Mount Cashel, the brothers came over in 1898, I believe. The orphanage was opened later that year with support from the Archdiocese and operated then until 1989 when it was closed down. And the first account of abuse that I'm aware of dates from probably about 1938, a gentleman who has passed on but whom I spoke to many years ago. And the last report that I'm aware of dates from the mid-80s, And for most of the period in between, there were brothers at that orphanage who were convicted or otherwise credibly accused of abusing sexually and physically the boys in their care.
This is arguably one of the darkest periods of Newfoundland history, and reading an outline of the timeline into the scandal as it became known, dating back to the mid-1970s, it really reads like a horror novel. Why was it so long before anybody would listen to these boys?
That's really the question, isn't it? You have to think it was a very different Newfoundland back then. All churches were held in a much higher, I guess, regard and with a much greater degree of deference than we can really imagine now. And that was certainly true in St. John's of the Catholic Church. And the starting point is that these are holy people who are here on a sacred mission. It would be a brave child who would say anything, and even if that child did spoke, would people listen? For all that, over the years, there were instances where children spoke out, and nothing or very little was done. And in the mid-1970s, of course, what you just referred to, it went to a whole new level when the Department of Social Services were informed of, and the RNC, of allegations of abuse. And then as we know, and your older readers, listeners will know, and maybe some of the younger ones too, the RNC investigation, which in November 1975 interviewed several dozen boys who had been at the orphanage and had many complaints of abuse against certain brothers, the Christian Brothers and officials of the government of Newfoundland shut down that police investigation in an arrangement basically where the brothers left Newfoundland never to return in a child care capacity, and in return they were never charged. The boys were returned to the orphanage and business went on. That came to light in 1988, and that led to such outrage in the community that the government of the day called a commission of inquiry, presided over by a judge from Ontario named Samuel Hughes. So the Hughes Commission sat in 1989-1990 for about 150 days. It was televised. It shocked the community. I remember that, and others will too. But for younger people, it's hard to imagine really the degree to which that was shocking. But there it was, and and many changes were made. Mountcastle was closed. The government hired more social workers. Victim services was set up at about that time. So it did lead to some positive changes. And among them being the closing of Mountcastle.
So much, and you pointed out there, rightly so, so much has changed in society over the decades. Not only was this great deference given to the church as a whole, but the attitudes towards some of these children were rather different than what we would understand today. A lot of these children simply weren't believed. They thought these kids were, troublemakers, or they came from a different socioeconomic background. Their circumstances were different than my own, we'll say, not mine, but you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
There was a real problem for these children to be heard.
That's all true. It's sad and unfortunate, but yes, that, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. And it was also a time where people just didn't have the awareness we have now. It was just a different era, and some things were known. It was always known. As I asked the Archbishop of the day when he testified in our trial, it was always known, it was always understood that sexual behaviors between adults and children were wrong, that what the brothers were doing would have been understood as wrong. but it was regarded, I think, as either unimaginable or so rare as to be extremely unlikely. And unfortunately, it wasn't that rare.
My guest today on Target is lawyer Jeff Budden. We're talking about the Supreme Court's ruling yesterday involving his clients. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today is Jeff Budden. He's a lawyer, and we are discussing the Supreme Court of Canada's ruling yesterday denying an attempt by the Roman Catholic Church in St. John's to be absolved of responsibility for sex abuse that occurred at Mount Cashel Orphanage. And Jeff Budden, what was the church's argument in being absolved?
Their position was that They conceded very fairly that the abuse had occurred and that the men had suffered real damages because of that. Their argument was that the Christian Brothers of Ireland were a separate organization, not under the authority of the Archbishop, and therefore they should not be held responsible for what happened within the walls of Mount Cashel.
And what was the Supreme Court's take on that?
Well, the Supreme Court was pretty simple, really. They just had a one-line response that they were dismissing the leave application by which the church were trying to appeal the Court of Appeal decision. The Court of Appeal looked at, I guess our argument was, while the Christian Brothers, yes, they were a separate organization, but they were here at the request of the Archdiocese to do the work of the Archdiocese and were connected in so many ways. Funding, government relations, how the boys came to be at Mount Cashel, the land in question that Mount Cashel was built on had been owned by the and remained owned by the Archdiocese. So when you looked at all those connections, we argued that when you looked at all those connections, it wasn't really a separate activity at all. It was entirely integrated within what the Archdiocese was doing in St. John's, providing care for the Catholic community. The Court of Appeal essentially accepted that argument, and that's where the matters end. That argument prevailed, and the Court of Appeal found that because of those connections, the Archdiocese was liable to compensate for that abuse.
So is this well and truly over now for the 60 men you represent?
No. There is still, for some of them, the question of determining how much specifically they are entitled to, because no two people would be assessed exactly the same. And while the court did do the assessments for these four men, we know to the dollar how much they are entitled to. We'll have to go through some exercise of one sort or another, and there are a number of legal models to do this, to identify the damages to which the remaining men and anybody else who might come forward are entitled to.
The sad truth is there's no real victory here, that this doesn't help to heal wounds. So your clients are some of the older survivors. What are they saying to you?
Firstly, you're right. I mean, it's not a victory in the sense that the Archdiocese, the modern Archdiocese, certainly takes no pleasure in having to deal with these, and this is a legacy that's been forced on them from an earlier time. So I never regarded them as the enemy. It's just an unfortunate situation. Our clients are relieved this is over, because the possibility remained until yesterday that the Supreme Court of Canada could reverse what the Court of Appeal found and there'd be no liability and thence no compensation. So until yesterday morning at 11, that remained a possibility. That's no longer a possibility. They will get compensation. So, yes, they are relieved by that. And I think they feel satisfaction from knowing that the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court of Canada have really accepted what they've always felt, which is that they were, in a matter of speaking, wards of the church, and the church was responsible for them and couldn't simply say, oh, that was the brothers, it has nothing to do with us.
What kind of a precedent does this set now for some of the other outstanding cases?
It's an absolute precedent that if you're at Mount Cashel in this era, the 40s, 50s, into the 60s, and were abused, then that the church is responsible to compensate you. The archdiocese is responsible to compensate you. For men in other eras, it certainly, for later eras, obviously, it could well have strong precedent value, but it's not quite as straightforward because the court wasn't looking at that. And for churches, for institutions across Canada, it could be relevant. So it's a decision that has significance well outside the borders of Newfoundland.
Obviously, you get to know your clients very well over the course of these kinds of activities. What are they like? How are they doing?
You're talking about a large group of people, dozens of them, and they're all different. Some are very accomplished. We have retired teachers, retired civil servants, people who've had good careers in a variety of fields, who've had happy marriages, have raised families, and so they're, from the outside looking in, they're leading very fulfilling lives. However, many of them feel that, look, I've accomplished this, but I may have been 30 before I really got my life together. I lost my 20s in turmoil and addictions, perhaps, or they may feel there are opportunities they just never had the ability to pursue because of the legacy of loss of self-esteem and worse that can come from abuse. So even men who've done well still feel they've been impacted in a bad way, and others haven't done so well at all. They've had quite dysfunctional lives. So it's, if you picked a group of people at random, some would be doing okay and some would not be doing okay. And, it's much the same here.
This is just one of a number of cases that have stemmed from this. It astounds me that 30 years after the fact, we're still talking about this in terms of, unfinished business. There are other lawyers, there are other cases. Any idea how many are involved?
Not precisely. I know it's a small legal community. We all know each other well, and Bob Buckingham, Richard Rogers, we've all worked together over the years on these cases. I know the guys have some, and there may be others out there as well. So I believe our firm represents the majority of these claimants from this generation, but there are others out there as well. I have no idea how many. Nobody knows because there are people who have never come forward.
And, of course, you've gotten to know the church officials and their representatives as well. You said that, you don't see them as the enemy here. They've just inherited this from an earlier era. Are they truly, I guess, sorry for what happened?
Oh, I'm sure they are. We've had good working relationships we've had with the lawyers. They're doing what they feel is necessary, and the church officials, like I said, they've, I may disagree with certain decisions they made along the way, but there's no doubt they've been given an awful legacy to try to sort out. I don't envy them, and nobody should.
My guest today on Target is lawyer Jeff Budden. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Jeff Budden is my guest today on Target. He's a well-known lawyer in the St. John's region. Of course, he was representing four representative plaintiffs in a case dating back to sexual abuse at Mount Cashel. There was a Supreme Court ruling on that yesterday. And Jeff, Newfoundland and Labrador arguably was one of the very first jurisdictions to uncover the widespread cover-up of sexual abuse within the church. which that goes back a few decades now, but how does it know, feeling that we were among the first that helped shed light on that problem?
Well, it's on the one hand, obviously, you know, it's not a good thing to have that kind of legacy, to have to live in a place where this happened. However, it is a good thing that we were fairly quick to deal with it once it finally did emerge into the light in 1988. The Hughes Commission heard from complainants, heard from experts, put the police officers and officials of the day on the stand and had them explain the decisions they made. So that's all positive. So it's mixed. I guess it's shameful that we have the history. It's something to be proud of that we were among the first to confront it in such a public way.
And the Hughes inquiry was such an eye-opener. Just imagine, you know, even if it was held today, the attention that it would have gotten. It found that formal complaints about sexual and physical abuse at Mount Cashel, dating back to the mid-70s, but were largely ignored by the very people that these children were seeking help from. It didn't really get any widespread attention until the late 1980s. So what was behind that? I mean, complaints were made to police, complaints were made to government officials, complaints were made to the church itself. No action.
Well, with the Hughes Commission, what I guess the thinking of the time for those who made the decision was that it would be, at least their justification was, it would be too traumatic for the boys to have to testify about these, you know, shameful activities. Not that the boys have any reason to be ashamed, but the feeling was that they would be embarrassed and traumatized by having to testify in court. So this deal was arrived at where the offending brothers would be sent off for some form of treatment and would not return, and the boys would go back to the orphanage and life would carry on. It obviously was self-serving in that it suited the Christian Brothers to keep this under wraps, and it perhaps suited the government as well, the government of the day. So the reasons given was that this saved the boys from the trauma of the court process. There's that reason, but then there's the other reality that it also saved these institutions from public exposure. So you'll make what you will of that.
Some real heroes emerged from all of this. I remember so well, like it was yesterday, the day that Shane Earle called VOCM Open Line. Bill Rowe was the host at that time. This has got to be 1989. And I was riveted. I was in our newsroom in Carbonear, and I used to keep Open Line on in the background just following the news. And wow, what a powerful call. And that's when it really started to become publicly discussed, if you will. It's such a powerful moment and so brave, really, when you consider all of the factors that were against some of these boys.
It really was, and especially at the time where, like, if somebody came forward now, you will have noticed, no doubt, that in this court case, there are no names used. They are John Doe's with a number assigned. And that's really because of fairly recent innovations in the law from the late 90s, where there's a process now that the normal rule that court is open court is different if you can convince the judge that it would be harmful to your client to have to testify in open court and be named about these childhood experiences. So the guys coming forward now, our client sat through this this trial, were on the stand for days, and as bad as that was, they at least didn't have to worry about everybody in St. John's knowing every detail of not just what happened to them, but how it affected them as adults in their intimate relations, in their work, in their relationship with their children, when Mr. Earle and others came forward in the late 80s, those protections didn't exist. So they were really talking about all these things in the spotlight. And I can't imagine. And again, it's not that they have anything to be ashamed about, and some people are comfortable doing that, but most people aren't. And most people don't want to talk about the worst experience of their lives on TV, and yet these guys were able to.
It is really extraordinary, because we simply don't approach things in that way now.
No, we've learned a lot. And if you look at, again, some of the court decisions around the use of John Doe, there's real wisdom in there, and a sense of vulnerabilities people have that just didn't exist. Not that people were callous, it's just that, you know, people just didn't understand, and now we do a little more. So that was quite a thing, the Hughes Commission, and it was all broadcast live and in real time.
Anything else that's surprising that we've learned, you know, that we don't often think of, but that some of what was revealed there and the discussions that were taking place that, you know, have changed over time, some of the more positive things?
I think there's a much stronger sense now that that children are vulnerable, which doesn't mean that, I mean, maybe in some ways people think we go too far and don't allow children any autonomy or don't trust anybody, and it certainly doesn't have to come to that. But there are certain warning signs, I suppose, or some basic things, like if somebody wants to be a foster parent today or wants to be a scout leader or a priest, for that matter, there's a lot more vetting that goes on. There's a lot more, checking out on the person and investigating them, and a lot more alertness to signs of trouble. So, which is why we don't hear these. One reason why we don't hear these terrible scandals as much as we once did. In Canada now, if you go to other countries of the world, as I have, working on cases, it's like going back in time, where you have far more deference to authority, religious authority and others. You have far more stigma about coming forward. So it's we have come a long way here, but you know, lots of places in the world, they're back where we were in 1980.
And, of course, a lot of major institutions have gone through some of these processes as well, sadly. It hasn't just been the church.
Correct.
And in part because, I suppose, of the lessons learned here.
You see in, really the problem is that children are inherently vulnerable, and some people... Not many, but some people will prey on them if given the opportunity. So it's all about denying them that opportunity. You know, allowing kids to be kids, to participate in fun activities and learning activities, but to make sure that the adults guiding them are good people.
My guest today on Target is lawyer Jeff Budden. We're talking about yesterday's Supreme Court ruling regarding Mount Cashel Orphanage and the clients that he represents. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target is lawyer Jeff Budden. And Jeff, the question has to be asked, why, after so many years after the Hughes inquiry, are we still fighting these legal battles?
A couple of reasons. One is that people...
Anand.
Pardon?
Anand.
Oh, I'm sorry. There must be something going on here. You go ahead.
Okay. A couple of reasons. One is that people often are, it takes a long, long time to come forward. And the courts recognize that. And the government of Newfoundland in 1996 actually amended the Limitations Act. So really, this is the only area of law where I'm going to talk about survivors of sexual abuse, where there really is no limitation. You can come forward 50 years after the abuse happened, as opposed to, say, a car accident where you're limited to 2 years. So there's that. But in our particular case, we started this case in December of 1999, but originally there were two defendants we sued. One was a Christian Brother organization in New York, and the other was the Episcopal Corporation of St. John's. The focus was on the Christian Brothers, because they, after all, were the people who were the primary caregivers of the children. And we had a legal battle that went on for about 13 years to eventually get compensation out of them. And that involved years of litigation. They said that we'd sued the wrong Christian Brother organization, and we fought that and had application after application to get information and examined witnesses, and we're back and forth to New York, and eventually won that battle. And then they went into insolvency, and that set up another 2 or 3 or 4 years of litigation that eventually saw, I think across North America, there were 422 claimants, of whom 150 were from Newfoundland, and the rest were from other places where the brothers had operated. And we worked together very collaboratively with lawyers for survivors in those places. And when the Christian Brothers were liquidated, their assets were liquidated, there was a distribution, so our clients and others did get some money back in 2013 or so. However, it wasn't adequate compensation, so we continued against the Archdiocese, had a trial, a very long, complex trial, which understandably led to a long period of time for the judge to write the decision. We appealed that decision and had another hearing and another long period of time as these very complex issues were considered by the court, and another 100-plus page written decision came out. And then another brief period of time as the church, which was unhappy with that decision, appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada. So the process that began in December of 1999 really ended on January 14th, 2021.
What's this process been like with you? Because, I mean, you get to know your clients on a personal level. You know their joys. You know their sorrows. You know their good days and bad. You know, what's it been like for you after all of these years?
It's been an honor to get to know these guys. Because a lot of them are people I've formed relationships with and I'm fond of, obviously. And as a group, we've worked well. My staff have always really liked them, found them to be respectful and great clients to deal with. I've been to a few funerals along the way, too. Not all the guys have survived. So it's been an intense, challenging case in many ways, but I formed some great relationships that I'm privileged to have had.
You mentioned some of those funerals. Was that one of the fears that, you know, that this might not be concluded in time?
It's always a fear, and particularly when you're dealing with clients who they themselves say they're getting on in years, as I suppose you know, we all are, but this abuse happened, some of it before Confederation, 71, 72 years ago. So we're talking about things that happened a long time ago to people who are now elderly. So yeah, that's a concern, always has been, and is more so with every passing day.
Not everything is black and white, and I think a lot of us like to see things in good and bad, and this is the hero and this is the enemy and all of those kinds of things, but some of those lines can be blurred. Has this shaken the faith of some of your more faithful clients?
Yes. They were all raised in a very observant they all had very observant, religiously observant childhoods. I mean, that's almost hardly needs to be said. They grew up in a Roman Catholic orphanage, went to confession, went to Mass, and were, as children, regarded as, you know, devout and believers in their faith. And some still are, but many are not. And many have no faith. Many have found other faiths. Others are still attend church, and some attend church and are able to say, I had the misfortune to run into some bad people who masqueraded as people of faith, but that doesn't affect the fact that, you know, I believe in my church. I believe in its you know, dogmas and principles, and I'm able to separate the two.
How have some of them come to resolve this in their own minds?
I think that way they see this as these were bad people or manipulative people who took advantage of institutions that just weren't alert to the harm and the risk. But they still regard those institutions, at least as they are now, as good. And if they're believers, they believe that, you know, it's all part of you know, their faith is important to them, and they're able to separate the bad things that happened from the goodness of their faith.
What happens now?
What happens now is, I'm running up against the point that I'm able to talk openly, but there will be, you know, we would anticipate the Archdiocese will recognize its obligations, and we will, in a very orderly fashion, sort out these claims, pay the damages that are owed for the people who have yet to have assessments to do assessments of their damages, to do that in a speedy fashion, and finally put this behind everybody. That's not going to be easy for the Archdiocese to do, but that's what we believe they must do. So that's what we hope will unfold, and that will happen soon.
Any more outstanding claims that you're responsible for?
Well, when I speak of a group of about 60, I'm thinking of my clients. I'm aware, obviously, of other people. The odd person has approached us, but never, you know, really came forward and retained us. And we have clients from other areas of Mount Cashel as well, who have other defendants in their claims. So, but yeah, and I'm sure there are other people out there. And some of them may come forward, and some may have found peace, and good for them if they have.
Final thoughts?
It's been a long struggle, and I think people need to think this through. It's not something where there's really easy solutions or obvious victims beyond the perpetrators, who are always, or obvious villains beyond the perpetrators. But, you know, this is a case of very flawed institutions and flawed responses, and we all have to learn from that. So it's, you know, that we've put this behind us and have a better, safer society.
Jeff Budden, I know you've worked very hard on this over the years. I know that this comes as a great relief to you and your clients. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Take care.
That's lawyer Jeff Budden, and he's been speaking about the Supreme Court of Canada ruling yesterday, which denied an attempt by the Roman Catholic Church in St. John's to be absolved of responsibility for sex abuse that occurred at Mount Cashel Orphanage. Thank you, everyone, for listening this week. We'll be back, of course, on Monday, so stay tuned for that.